Continuing here with the Searchlight article. The main political issue facing the Berlusconi-Bolsifini bloc will be the Constitution. The Constitution is based on an anti-fascist concept derived from the struggle of the wartime partisans and which defends labor rights, women's rights, and the sovereignty of foreign countries. The fascists, in particular, cannot exercise power under this Constitution. Their tactics are therefore clear: to form a government and be part of it at all costs, then slowly from within to build an authoritarian state. Bearing in mind now the fascist control of education and the education and defense ministries under this new Berlusconi government itself, the fulfillment of the democratic rebirth planned by Licio Gelli in 76 and enunciated by him, the assault on the Constitution appears to have begun, and in yet another article in this Searchlight series, entitled appropriately enough, The Onslaught Begins, we can see, I think, a foretaste of the media blitz which will lead to an attempt, or which is involved with an attempt, to discredit and ultimately to replace the anti-fascist Constitution, or the anti-fascist elements of the Constitution in Italy. This particular article reads as follows. Before the election, hundreds of Italian teachers and professors issued a statement of support for the Progressive Alliance. The watchword was defense of the Constitution, and the statement declared, quote, "We will continue to tell the young people of the values on which the pact between freedom and liberty is founded. That pact we shall call anti-fascism," unquote. The Progressive Alliance consistently linked fascism with violence and attacked the anti-democratic, anti-constitutional positions of the fascists. The right's onslaught against the Constitution and its anti-fascist values has already begun. It was launched with a screening on television on April 6th of a film depicting how U.S. soldiers and Italian partisans treated captured fascists at the end of the war. The silent film, made by Lieutenant Tambert, T-A-M-B-E-R-T, of the U.S. Army Combat Camera Brigade, thinking in Italian here one more time. The silent film, made by Lieutenant Tambert, T-A-M-B-E-R-T, of the U.S. Army Combat Camera Brigade, was supposedly found in the Pentagon archives. Take note of that supposedly, because we're going to see different in a minute. Note here again the use of the media as a vehicle for preparing the Italian population for the onslaught of formal nationwide fascism. Continuing. The worst scenes of violence concentrated on executions of fascists. For 3 minutes, the film focused on the bodies of the fascist dictator Mussolini and his lover, Maria Petacci, immediately after their execution. P-E-T-A-C-C-I is Mussolini's paramour's last name. After the film, viewers were treated to a studio discussion led by journalist Vittorio Zucconi, Z-U-C-C-O-N-I, from the extreme conservative newspaper La Stampa, S-T-A-M-P-A. Giano Accame, or Giano Accame, A-C-C-A-M-A-A-M-E of the MSI, one of the three guests, explained how he had joined Mussolini's black shirts in 1943 because of the values that he saw endangered by the communist threat. When Tina Anselmi, A-N-S-E-L-M-I, an investigator for the Parliamentary Commission on P2, tried to explain why she had joined the anti-fascist partisans, she was abruptly told by Zucconi not to bring politics into the discussion. The third studio guest, Piero Fassino, F-A-S-S-I-N-O, of the PDS, was shouted down by an obviously hand-picked audience of young people when he tried to present an anti-fascist position. More than 60% of people under 25 voted for the Berlusconi-Bossi-Fini alliance. The origins of the film emerged on April 11th. It was not found in an obscure section of the Pentagon archives, but was offered to Zucconi for $25,000, or £17,000, by, quote, by some friends in New York, unquote, whom he refuses to name. Zucconi appears to be confused by his own enthusiasm for the Berlusconi-Bossi-Fini bloc. Since the program, his son has publicly denounced him as a fascist. The program's purpose was clear: to equate anti-fascist resistance fighters with fascists, to discredit the partisans and thereby diminish fascist crimes, and to whip up hysteria about the left in preparation for massive anti-fascist demonstrations. Its timing was also significant. The first announcement of the film's existence and, quote, discovery, unquote, was made on March 1st. It was not used before the election because of a possible boomerang effect, but after the elections, the atmosphere had changed. Terror is in the air. Tension is almost tangible, and the film was an ideal weapon for the first assault on the Constitution, belittling anti-fascism, and the values associated with it. Not surprisingly, its screening caused horror and uproar among Italian fascists and Democrats generally. In response to the offensive of the right, hundreds of thousands of anti-fascist Italians were due to take to the streets on April 25th, Italy's Liberation Day, to answer the fascists and to defend the Constitution. The mass demonstrations are being backed by the Progressive Alliance and the mayors of Bologna, Venice, Naples, and Rome, Palermo, and Trieste, as well as the three main trade union federations and the deans of numerous universities. Sections of the extreme right may well be preparing for a bloodbath. Vittorio Feltri, F-E-L-T-R-I, editor of the right wing and pro Berlusconi L'Indipendente, has warned ominously that by calling for demonstrations to defend the Constitution, quote, the left is signing its own death warrant, unquote. It should be borne in mind that the heavily armed Carabinieri are now under the administration of proposed fascist defense ministers and are led by senior officers, many of whom have fascist sympathies. In a rejoinder to Feltri, Luciano Lama, L-A-M-A, a leading trade unionist, declared, quote, I hope that on April 25th, our people will give a clear response in defense of our history, unquote. We must prevent our country from being governed by the inheritors of fascism, unquote. How the fascists will react to this challenge remains to be seen. Their two main options are to let the demonstrations pass without incident while they get on with the job of installing themselves in government, or to use the tense situation to create the kind of violence that would lend justification to some kind of coup, a high-risk gamble that would leave their current strategy of a slow takeover in tatters. So far, we have not seen a use of the fascist control of the defense ministry, but I would stay tuned for that. Note, however, that already the media are being used by the fascists to discredit the anti-fascist elements of the Constitution. And note again the key role of the Berlusconi media empire, its creation aided greatly by the P2 and envisioned as a key element of Group 17, the media component of P2, and as an essential element for the institution of Gilli's democratic rebirth of fascism, which involved, among other things, the discreditation of the Italian political establishment. That discreditation aired, that discreditation engineered by Gilli and aired all over the country and all over the world in the Clean Hands revelations, has, among other things, apparently, according at least to the analysis presented here, led to the dissolution of the Italian political center, the ascension to power of the Italian fascists, who are now in control of the education and defense ministries. And if you want to control a country, the control of the media, control of the educational process, control of the Carabinieri or national or federal police, and control of the armed forces is obviously a very, very good way to achieve fascist political control. I would note also that a principal element of the fascist coalition that is now in power in Italy is the mafia, also present in a big, big way in P2. We're going to take a look next at the mafia element in this right-wing fascist coalition. I would note, before we get into the analysis presented here by Searchlight, that one of the enduring myths of Italian fascism, and one which, frankly, I parroted in Radio Free America number 24, accessing the material by Alfred McCoy in The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia. I also recently parroted the same illusion in a series of lectures about the U.S. intelligence community's involvement with the drug traffic. One of the elements of the mythology of fascism that has survived, and obviously excellent researchers like Alfred McCoy have succumbed to a certain extent to this mythology, is that the mafia was opposed by Mussolini. Some elements of the mafia were, but the main elements of the mafia collaborated with Mussolini's fascist government. That collaborative pattern continues to this day, and it is important in understanding Italian fascism, that collaboration, that is. The last of the Searchlight articles that we're going to go into from the May 1994 Searchlight, again, not to be confused, the Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Searchlight, which is its opposite number. In an article entitled The Mafia Factor, we find the following, skipping down. There is a persistent myth of fascist origin that Mussolini tried to suppress the mafia. Yet apart from a six-month period in 1941 and 42, there is no evidence of any such measures. In 1941, Commissioner Moro was given the job of eradicating the Mafia from Sicily. It took the Mafia only 6 months to reach Mussolini and, quote, persuade, unquote, him to recall Moro to Rome. To warn Moro off, the Mafia attempted to murder him in his own office at the fascist secret police OVRA headquarters in Rome. Moro understood the warning and promptly retired. The fascists would never have been permitted to organize in Sicily in the 1920s without Mafia approval. That approval was based on the clear perception that the fascists were no challenge to the Mafia and that they held interests in common, above all the destruction of organized labor and left-wing organizations. The Mafia has occupied a pivotal position on the right since the liberation of Italy at the end of the war. It was the Mafia which had first guaranteed to J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI, that the communists would never be allowed to come to power or even to enter government in Italy. Together with their allies and puppets in the Christian Democratic Party, the DC, and the Masonic Lodges, they kept this promise for 49 years. This was not difficult. The Mafia had long been deeply embedded within the structure of Mussolini's fascist state. While the anti-fascist partisans fought a bitter war against Mussolini and the SS divisions, the Mafia collaborated with both. And I would note, as we looked at in numerous Radio Free America shows, including Radio Free America number 24, the Mafia collaborated closely with residual fascist elements and elements of U.S. intelligence in suppressing communism in post-World War II Italy. Continuing. When the U.S. military took control of Sicily in 1943, the administrative commander was Colonel Charles Poletti, P-O-L-E-T-T-I, a member of the Masonic Lodge. He chose the Mafia leaders of Western Sicily as best qualified to help with the transfer from fascist power to democracy. By the way, the head of the translating department of the American occupation government in Sicily was none other than American mafioso Vito Genovese, the model for the lead character in the movie The Godfather. Continuing, also the novel by the same name by Mario Puzo. Continuing, together with their allies and, skipping down, Sicily was the Mafia's birthplace and remains its biggest stronghold outside New York. The election victory by the anti-Mafia Rete in Palermo last November, combined with the heroic work of Luciano Violante's anti-Mafia commission, was a severe blow to its activities. Violante is capital V-I-O-L-A-N-T-E. The Rete was not led by the left, although its mayoral candidate, Leonardo De Luca, a former Christian Democrat, was fully supported by it. His victory, with 66% of the vote, indicated the real hatred for the Mafia felt by ordinary, decent Sicilians. But the Mafia takes nothing lying down. Its campaign of intimidation was so intense that in the parliamentary elections in March, the vote for the Rete was slashed to 12% in the west of the island and 10% in the east. Now the election, quote, canvassers, unquote, of the Mafia have dropped another, quote, hint, unquote. They want De Luca's resignation. Skipping down, and next we're going to see connections between the Italian Mafia and not only the strategy of tension, but also to the Galen-inspired and connected Gladio milieu, of which Licio Gelli and the P2 Lodge were an essential part. The tendrils of that milieu going all the way through such incidents as the Solingen firebombings that we looked at a couple of weeks ago in the material from the Germany Alert newsletter. Continuing. The combined operations of the Clean Hands Commission, the Anti-Mafia Commission, and the Anti-Terrorist Commission have cut deep wounds in the Mafia's flesh. They have uncovered, for example, the links between the Mafia, the now disbanded Secret Services SISDE and SISMI, and the fascist international terrorist Friedrich Schaudin, S-C-H-A-U-D-I-N-N. Schaudin, though sentenced to 24 years in prison for his part in the 1984 fascist bombing of the Naples-Milan Express 904 train, in which 15 people were killed and 267 injured, currently lives in Germany under the apparent protection of Helmut Kohl's government. Schaudin's name was mentioned in the evidence of Donatella Di Rosa, D-I, capital D-I, capital R-O-S-A, a fascist who was awaiting trial in Italy on high treason and arms smuggling charges in connection with preparations backed by P2, and the Mafia for a military coup led by General Franco Monticone and planned for the end of last year or the start of 1994. Monticone is M-O-N-T-I-C-O-N-I. I would note that as I speak on 6/26/94, Recently, Helmut Kohl welcomed very cordially the aforementioned Silvio Berlusconi, head of the right-wing fascist mafia coalition in Italy. Note here again the presence of the mafia and their collaboration with the German terrorist, Mr. Schaudin, who worked with the strategy of tension Gladio stay-behind milieu in Italy. Schaudin, who lives in Gronau, G-R-O-N-A-U, near Frankfurt on Main, was also named as part of the mafia fascist gang which bombed Florence's historic Uffizi Museum in May of 1992. Responsibility for the attack was claimed by the fascist Falange Armata, but the act was carried out on behalf of the mafia in revenge for a wave of arrests ordered by the Anti-Mafia Commission. In an interview with L'Unità on 16th of October of last year, Schaudin admitted that he was able to leave Italy via Austria in 1986 without ever being asked for his passport. In other terrorist scandals and coup plots, the hands of the fascists, Licio Gelli's P2 Lodge, Gladio, and the Mafia have been permanent fixtures. Between them, they engineered the escape in 1977 of Herbert Kappler, K-A-P-P-L-E-R, a former SS general and German war criminal. They stood behind the infamous slaughter at Bologna in 1980. In 1992, fascist terrorist bombings in Rome and Milan cost 5 lives. By the way, in the aforementioned Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, all of these crimes were discussed. Bear in mind also the escape of Herbert Kappler connected with Colonia Dignitana, the SS Nazi colony in Peru, or in Chile, excuse me, that in turn was connected with the U.S.-backed fascist coup in Chile, and in turn was connected with Operation Condor, a fascist assassination consortium of Latin American countries, in turn very closely connected to the Italian fascist milieu and also connected to reactionary elements of the U.S. national security establishment as well. Continuing. In October of 1993, a man arrested on suspicion of playing a role in these crimes turned out to be a Justice Ministry official who had worked with members of the Internal Secret Service, SISMI, and had mafia connections. Even last autumn, Secret Service fascists were involved in a failed attempt to bomb the Palermo-Turin express train. Among those later arrested were two Camorra gangsters who claimed to have been carrying out the orders of Secret Service Chief Augusto Citana, capital C-I-T-A-N-N-A. Later information proved that the source of the mafia's information on the movements of the murderous anti-mafia... Proved that the source of the mafia's information on the movements of the murdered anti-mafia judge Falcone came from Bruno Contrada, a CISDE officer. Of course, Falcone was looking into the depredations of the mafia, the P2, the Italian fascists, the strategy of tension, and also the aforementioned Monzer El Kassar, an associate of Oliver North, an associate of Nazi-connected Middle Eastern terrorist milieu, an associate of Italian fascists, and an individual who was implicated in the insurance investigator's report in the bombing of Pan Am 103. More about Monzer El Kassar and his many, many connections to the international fascist milieu, of which Gelli, P2, Berlusconi and company are part, later on in the broadcast. Note here again the collaboration and the operational links between German fascism, Italian fascism, and the mafia. And bear in mind, again, the profound connections documented in, among other sources, again, the aforementioned Radio Free America programs 17 through 21 of American reaction and American fascism to the P2 milieu, which has now successfully, at least thus far, executed the democratic rebirth strategy of Licio Gelli, utilizing the media empire of Silvio Berlusconi and discrediting through scandal the Italian political establishment and Italian politicians. The anti-politics, anti-politician sentiment in Italy, one of the things that led to the ascension of the right-wing/fascist coalition headed up by former P2 member Silvio Berlusconi. Once again, all of those articles researched by a listener. They are from the British anti-fascist publication Searchlight from May of 1994. And once again, the Searchlight can be obtained from the following address: Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B as in Baker, New Cavendish Street, London, W as in William, 1, M as in Mary, 8, J as in Jolly, R as in Roger, 071-284-4040. And the fax number, 071-284-4410. We're going to continue with tonight's program, and what we're going to do is swing back to this side of the Atlantic, and once again, we're going to examine the rules of, or the principles of psychological warfare, as laid down by Sun Tzu and as echoed by none other than Reinhard Galen in his memoirs, The Service, the memoirs of General Reinhard Galen. He quotes Sun Tzu and his rules for political and psychological subversion, he that is being Galen. There is no art higher than that of destroying the enemy's resistance without a fight on the battlefield. The direct tactic of war is necessary only on the battlefield, but only the indirect tactic can lead to a real and lasting victory. And again, in place of enemy, substitute a population targeted for fascist takeover. Subvert anything of value in the enemy's country. Implicate the emissaries of the major powers in criminal undertakings. Undermine their position and destroy their reputation in other ways as well, and expose them to the public ridicule of their fellow citizens. Do not shun the aid of even the lowest and most despicable people. Disrupt the work of their government with every means you can. Spread disunity and dispute among the citizens of the enemy's country. Turn the young against the old. Use every means to destroy their arms, their supplies, and the discipline of the enemy's forces. Debase old traditions and accepted gods. Be generous with promises and rewards to purchase intelligence and accomplices. Send out your secret agents in all directions. Do not skimp with money or with promises, for they yield a high return. Bearing in mind the democratic rebirth envisioned by Licio Gelli, bearing in mind the Group 17 media component of that strategy as embodied in Silvio Berlusconi and as successfully realized by Berlusconi, Gelli, and company, with the clean hands disclosures, the scandalizing of the Italian political establishment, the resulting, according to the Searchlight, a dissolution of the political center, and the consequent ascension of the right-wing fascist coalition in Italy. In the United States, an element of the media in general have, in my opinion, been exceedingly hostile to Bill Clinton. Clinton is no day at the beach, in my opinion. But at the same time, I have never seen a political figure receive such blatantly slanted media treatment. And the right-wing talk shows have been particularly virulent in their attacks on Bill Clinton. And I think in the messages being presented by people like Jerry Falwell, Rush Limbaugh, G. Gordon Liddy, and others, the psychological strategy that was enunciated by Sun Tzu and the strategy of discreditation of the political establishment and politicians realized by Licio Gelli in Italy is also being actualized here in this country by the Reagan and Bush, by the political forces exemplified by Ronald Reagan and George Bush, and the political forces which are gathering behind the banner of such individuals as Oliver North. I think there is a very real possibility of the complete triumph of the fascist forces that are hard at work and rapidly gaining power in this country. They've been in basic control for a long time, just as the P2 forces were able to wield the strings of power very effectively in Italy. They have not as yet been formally christened in a political sense, but I think that's a very real possibility. And bear in mind some of my ruminations over the many years, accentuated in the past couple of weeks, concerning the very real possibility of an economic collapse in this country, or a worldwide economic collapse. As I speak, on June 26th of 1994, the dollar is in very, very bad position, and the collapse, or at least the serious weakening of the dollar, is certainly going to force Bill Clinton to raise interest rates. That's going to hurt, quote, economic recovery to the extent that it's going on. And indeed, the replacement of the dollar by the mark, the D-mark as the currency of choice, would have very serious implications for the world economy, including the German economy. Bear in mind my working hypothesis presented in Radio Free America number 37 that not only did fascism not die, not only did the Third Reich not die, it went underground and over the period of time prevailed, utilizing the Christian West concept the Nazi survival strategy embodied in NATO, the use of anti-communism as a vehicle for conquest, the Galen Organization as literally a Trojan horse in the United States, and the manipulation of the United States to realize the rollback or liberation strategy, which had its genesis with Rosenberg's Ostministerium and its successful realization under the administrations of George Bush and Ronald Reagan, having triumphed in the United States, politically speaking, with the assassination of John Kennedy. Once again, from the San Francisco Examiner Chronicle of today, June 26th of 1994, an article, a front-page story entitled, Rights Jihad Against Clinton, subtitled, Take No Prisoners Crusade Includes Murder Accusations and Sleazy Sex Talk. This is by Eric Eckholm, E-C-K-H-O-L-M of the New York Times, and it reads in part, For four successive weeks last month, viewers of the Reverend Jerry Falwell's old-time gospel hour on cable television were treated not to the good tidings of Jesus, but to excerpts from a videotape in which President Clinton was accused, among other dark deeds, of arranging for the murder of an Arkansas investigator who supposedly had proof of his trysts. In the televised excerpts, Gary Parks, son of the investigator who was shot to death last fall by unknown assailants, says, quote, I think Bill Clinton had my father killed to save his political career, unquote. He offers no supporting evidence. Falwell, who described Clinton as, quote, the most radical and controversial president in our nation's history, unquote, aggressively promoted the videotape on his program, calling it an expose featuring, quote, the people who know the truth, unquote. The accusation of murder may be the most startling example of the harsh attacks being directed on Bill and being directed at Bill and Hillary Rodham Clinton. But the spread of Clinton dirt and rumors of Clinton dirt has become a virtual industry, prompting the president to complain bitterly Friday about, quote, scurrilous and false charges, unquote, and, quote, violent personal attacks, unquote. The roughest assaults are coming mainly from fundamentalist Christian leaders who portray the Clintons as anti-Christian and from arch-conservative pressure groups that raise funds through direct mail. Well, while people are lambasting Clinton for his alleged scandals, and I have noted in the past the numerous suspicious deaths connected either with the Bill Clinton campaign or with his administration, I think the authorship of those events lies rather with the political forces that are backing Oliver North, Jerry Falwell, that back Ronald Reagan and George Bush, and not with Bill Clinton himself. I would also note the book Compromised, a new book by Terry Reed and John Cummings, which sheds further light on the MENA, Arkansas connection, a principal element of the Contra supply effort being directed by Oliver North and which took place in Arkansas under Bill Clinton's stewardship. Clinton, a conservative Southern Democrat, was always a strong, hard-nosed cold warrior, and like most Southern Democrats, has been traditionally conservative on national security and economic matters, and relatively liberal on social policy. I would note also that the charges are made by Terry Reed, one of Oliver North's subordinates in the Contra supply effort. That Adler Barry Seal, discussed, by the way, in Radio Free America number 29, had been assigned to, quote, dirty up, unquote, the Clinton gubernatorial administration by associating them with the Contra-related drug traffic. Among the things that we're not hearing about, for the time being, in the firestorm of media criticism being directed at Bill Clinton, also, as I speak on 6/26/94, because of the media circus surrounding O.J. Simpson, the story that I touched on last week, I will simply allude to it this week and annotate it, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, June 17th of 1994, the story by the AP, datelined Austin, Texas, and headlined, North knew pilots ran drugs, agent says. This is a fellow named Celerino, C-E-L-E-R-I-N-O, or Cele, C-E-L-E Castillo, C-A-S-T-I-L-L-O, a career DEA agent who reinforces the statements made in the book The Big White Lie by career DEA officer Michael Levine that not only was the Contra support effort deeply involved with cocaine, but that indeed the Central Intelligence Agency and the related Contra supply effort directed by Oliver North was directly responsible for the cocaine epidemic of the 1980s. Certainly, although that much is not stated by Cele Castillo in this particular story, Castillo has a new book out in which he discusses his confrontations with George Bush and Oliver North concerning the Contra-related drug traffic, confrontations which had no results, and Castillo was said that he was told, quote, to back off, unquote.